region or have another print disability which makes reading, holding a book, or turning a page difficult or impossible. The content is copyrighted by the respective publishers. For more information, please visit us on the web at nfradioreading.org.
Around Our Area continues now on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. Your reader for this hour is Sally Herzog. We go to our first paper, the South Towns Bee, and this is the West Seneca, Orchard Park, and East Aurora newspapers. It's the Thursday, August 13, 2026 edition. Our first article, Happy 99th. Orchard Park residents marks 99th birthday. Leonard Bradley is now part of Club 99 in more ways than one. The Orchard Park resident and World War II veteran celebrated his 99th birthday last week with his wife Carol and almost 100 well-wishers who are part of the twice-weekly Club 99 fitness program at the Orchard Park Senior Center. Leonard, who wanted to take a moment before we got moving today to tell you just how much you mean to this group. As an avid member of our Club 99 family, you bring so much energy, dedication, and joy to this room every single week, Senior Center Director Maria Galley told those in attendance. Also on hand were Julie Rosalza from the Erie County Department for the Aging and Randy Hoke, Commissioner of the Erie County Department for the Aging. Bradley even got the crowd going with his rendition of Happy Birthday on the harmonica. Your commitment inspires all of us to keep moving. We are so grateful for your friendship, your bright smile, and the wonderful spirit you bring to our senior center. We are absolutely thrilled to share this birthday with you today, Kelly said. Bradley is a veteran of the United States Navy and served shipboard on a troop carrier in the Pacific Theater during the Second World War. His ship was part of the massive U.S. flotilla that was present in Tokyo Bay on September 2, 1945, for the formal Japanese surrender aboard the battleship Missouri that officially ended the war. The Navy later distributed copies of the document of surrender to every American serviceman present, including Bradley. He recently was part of an honor flight where World War II veterans are flown to Washington and escorted to the war memorial dedicated to them and their service. West Seneca doubles cyber liability coverage. This is by Eric Kepler. It wasn't without some contention, but the West Seneca Town Board voted unanimously on Monday to upgrade the town's cyber insurance liability coverage from $250,000 to $500,000. There was no disagreement among the board members about the desire to increase the coverage, but it was the presentation from the insurers that drew the lawmakers' ire. Whatever comes forward in the future has to be clear, and it has to be in layman's terms that the average person can understand, said Councilman Bob Bridenstein, who has been an outspoken proponent of cyber coverage, insurance for dummies like me. The board took issue with conflicting numbers and prices, some of which were not even provided to the council prior to the Monday's meeting. But the larger gripe was the timing. The town's current policy and coverage are set to expire on August 16th, leaving little time to examine the data. We're getting this information, and we have to make this decision tonight because we don't have another board meeting until the 24th, said Councilman Scott Robertson. So I think moving forward, I would request that all of the town board members are brought into the loop a little sooner so that we can digest this information and make the best choice for the residents and taxpayers of this community. One of the unfortunate recipients of that ire was Kathleen Rapasati, the town's longtime insurance agent with Tompkins Insurance, who started the renewal process 6 months ago. However, Tompkins was recently acquired by Gallagher Insurance, adding another viable to the mix. Rapasati agreed that the timing was unacceptable, and Randy Glenn from Gallagher, who was also present, tried to take the blame. Kathleen did have the renewal, quote, timely, Glenn said. I think I may have thrown a curveball into the mix by asking her to get more options because we are in a soft market right now for cyber. It's my fault. I was trying to improve the coverage. In the future, we will certainly get the quotes all along sooner. Ultimately, the town had three options. Keep the current policy, that's 250,000 coverage, 10,000 deductible, upgrade to 500,000 with 10,000 deductible, increase of $204, or you can upgrade to 500,000 with zero deductible, an increase of $4,800. Rapsody said they had reached out to three other insurance carriers, all of whom declined to provide a quote because they either didn't insure municipalities or they couldn't match the numbers. The board approved the second option, which raised the coverage to $500,000 with a $10,000 deductible at an annual cost of $24,342. I'm okay with the coverage increase for a couple hundred dollars because that's better, but the presentation needs a lot of work, Bridenstine said. If it was at the end of the month, I'd say come back. But I feel as though we're stuck, because it's either do it or lose it. And Lord knows what would happen then. You guys, on your end, have to get better at getting all of us the information, so that when residents ask questions, we have answers. I need for that to happen with at least 30 days' notice, or don't come back. Meet the new boss. Lowry is new Iroquois Board of Education president. This is also by Eric Kepler. With a shift at the top of the lineup, the Iroquois Central School District Board of Education is getting ready to meet the latest set of challenges ahead of the 2026-27 school year. Newcomer David Lowry was selected as Board of Education president last month. He succeeds Jim Mahalik, who had been president in the two previous years. Heather Becker is the new vice president, taking over for Keith Virgin. Dr. Caitlin Letizia was elected to the board in May, and Lisa Starr was sworn in earlier this month to fill out the board. That also includes Mahalik, Virgin, and Todd Eichinger. Lowry recently took the time to share his thoughts on some of the issues the board may face in the upcoming year. A question: how can you balance declining state and federal aid against rising costs and shrinking student enrollment? The answer: this was a complicated question with many different answers. One of the biggest costs in education is educating students with special needs. When the federal government enacted the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, the stipulation was that the federal government would pay for 40% of the cost. Unfortunately, the federal government only funds about 10 to 12% of that funding, requiring states to pick up the cost and thus creating a shortfall. The state has its own laws on the books that affect education, and many of the laws are mandated rather than allowing for local control. As a school board, we are constantly advocating for local control so that we can better control costs. Costs continue to rise, and student population continues in some districts to decline. However, it's not easy to cut programs and balance out classes, even though the student population may decrease by 100 students. If the population decreases the first grade level 20, at the second grade level 20, at the third grade level, and 20 at the fourth grade level, simple math allows you to cut one class at each grade level and save money. However, those 100 students are all at different grade levels, and some may be in special education classes requiring personal care aides and other services that are required of other students. So by just a few students leaving at each grade level, cuts tend to be somewhat limited. I do believe that with more regionalization and more collaboration of districts, there could possibly be a sharing of services, particularly at the high school and middle school level. It would require a little bit of work, but most likely could be done. In New York State, the local tax rate is the third highest among the 50 states. All other states have a greater share of funding coming from both the federal and state governments. Question. The district budget for the upcoming school year was passed with relative ease. Aside from unpredictable state aid, what are the biggest issues for the next budget? The answer, just joining the board this year, I'm not sure what the discussion has been regarding long-term goals and looking at capital projects for the district. One issue that needs to be addressed is the zero-emission buses. The cost of an electric bus is 2 or 3 times more expensive than a diesel bus. The infrastructure is not reliable, and the facilities are not prepared for the move to the zero emissions buses. Other items that will need to be addressed include air conditioning in many of our schools, or parts of our schools. Many times legislation is enacted that affects spending in schools. Question. What steps would you like to see the district take to enhance its cybersecurity against outside threats? The answer, most of the software and cybersecurity safeguards that are in place come through Erie One BOCES, WNYRIC. Continuing to take part in this service will help to mitigate cybersecurity threats. Educating staff and students about cybersecurity is probably one of the best ways to mitigate threats. I am not the expert, and as always, it's best to consult the IT personnel at the district on additional measures that could be taken. A question? With 1 year in the books, is distraction-free learning a dead issue? Do you think it helped? And are there tweaks that need to be made? His answer, I do think that elimination of cell phones during instructional time led to more students' engagement based on the feedback we have heard from teachers. I retired from teaching in 2018. Cell phones were a distraction in the schools back then. However, many times administrators did not want to deal with the issue. By passing legislation, it forced administrators to address the issue and not leave the entire problem to the classroom instructor. I am not in the schools on a day-to-day basis, so I would like to hear more from students, teachers, and administrators on what could be done. Technology is constantly advancing, so although it might be cell phones now, it could be something else next that we will have to combat, and we'll need to continue to review our policies as a Board of Education. And question, like it or not, AI is here to stay. Is there a use for it in schools, and how can you regulate it to guard against misuse? His answer, Board of Education need to attend programs to learn about the use and misuse of AI in schools. The education of school board members will help board members to understand many aspects of artificial intelligence and help them to develop appropriate policies. I do not believe artificial intelligence will go away, so learning how to use it to assist education of students and prepare them for higher education and the workforce needs to be the focus of the use of artificial intelligence. Construction begins on Knox Farms' historic stone wall. Restoration work has begun on the historic stone wall along Buffalo Road at Knox Farms State Park, marking the start of a long-awaited preservation project made possible through a $500,000 Erie County grant awarded in 2024. The project led by the Friends of Knox Farms State Park in partnership with the New York State Office of Parks, Recreation, and Historic Preservation will focus on rebuilding approximately 500 linear feet of the wall that has deteriorated into rubble. The damaged section represents part of the wall's roughly 3,000-foot length and was identified as the highest priority following engineering studies that evaluated its condition. Construction is expected to continue through the summer, with Horizon Masonry overseeing the reconstruction. Earlier this spring, crews removed 13 dead or hazardous trees along the wall to prepare the site for repairs. The Friends of Knox Farm State Park said the restoration has been years in the making. Although repairing the landmark wall has long been a priority, other structural and public safety projects across the park had taken precedence because of limited funding and staffing. The Erie County grant allowed the organization to move forward with the preservation effort. The Friends, a nonprofit organization dedicated to preserving the park's historic character, received the grant after years of investing financial resources and volunteer labor into improvements throughout the property. Former Erie County legislator James Malczewski, who helped secure the funding, praised the organization's ongoing work to preserve one of Western New York's most recognizable parks. It is very satisfying to see physical progress on a project that has been consistently largely of contract negotiations, engineering studies, and hopes and dreams for the past 2 years, Executive Director Kathleen York said. She said the project reflects hundreds of hours of planning and collaboration with state park officials to ensure the grant funding is used effectively. Once the initial reconstruction phase is complete, project leaders will reassess the remaining work and available funding before determining future restoration efforts for the rest of the wall. The Friends of Knox Farm State Park is a 501c3 nonprofit organization whose mission is to preserve and promote the park's historic character and beauty for future generations, in partnership with the New York State Office of Parks, Recreation, and Historic Preservation. West Seneca BOE, the Stand Pat. This is by Eric Kepler. The West Seneca Central School District Board of Education has decided not to fill the vacant position on its board and go with 6 members for the time being. The board had met with a number of candidates for an interim appointment ahead of its July 28th meeting, but ultimately decided to let voters make the call in May. The board appreciates the genuine interest that community members have expressed through their applications to serve the district, BOE President Marla Greenberg said. After careful consideration, the board has decided not to appoint an additional member at this time. Instead, the board believes it's important to allow the community to decide who should fill the vacant seat through the annual election, which will be held next May. The seat came open in late June when Zach Armstrong announced his resignation as he and his family were relocating to Florida. Armstrong had been elected to a 3-year term on the Board of Education in 2025. There were 3 options for filling Armstrong's seat on the board, which included holding a special election to fill the remainder of the term through June 30, 2028, keeping the seat open until the May 2027 election, or eliciting interest from the community where the board could select and appoint a replacement. The special election was ruled out over cost concerns, and the board wanted to try and keep a full slate, so they agreed on the third option for an interim appointment through June 30th, 2027, and be up for a vote in May. By operating with 6 board members was always an option, and that was ultimately the path that was chosen. From the outset, the board had the option to not fill the seat, and after meeting with the candidates, that was the direction the board chose to take, Greenberg said. After going through the process, we decided it was in the best interest of the school district and community to allow the voters to choose through the upcoming election process. Reedy is West Seneca Police Department's newest lieutenant. This also is by Eric Kepler. The West Seneca Town Board unanimously approved on Monday the promotion of West Seneca Police Department Detective Joseph Reedy, Jr., to lieutenant, effective the following day. I found out about a week and a half ago that I was very excited, Reedy said. I've been a detective for 4.5 years, and this was the next step. Being a supervisor. Reedy has been with the West Seneca Police Department for 13 years as a patrol officer and then a detective. Prior to that, he spent 1 year with the Rochester Police Department. As a detective, he was part of the Family Offense Unit that dealt with crimes against children, domestic violence, and juvenile justice. He's been a detective for a few years now, and prior to that, he was a very strong officer in patrol. West Seneca Police Department Chief Brian Cosgrove said, from the minute he took a report, he always took it as far as he could in terms of investigation and seeing cases through until charges were made. I'm looking forward to him teaching his subordinates how to do the job that way. In his new role, Reedy will go back to patrol, but this time as a supervisor for other officers. He says there may be a learning curve, but he looks forward to the challenge. That's a big part of the change, Reedy said. I want to be closer to the new guys and make sure that they don't get discouraged and that they're doing the job for the right reasons. I want them to be confident in themselves. You try to lead by example and leave a good impression. It just comes naturally. Spectrum Health to host a hiring event in Orchard Park. Spectrum Health and Human Services, a leader in providing behavioral health services, is seeking to build its workforce and will host a hiring event from 4 until 6:30 p.m. Wednesday, September 23rd at its administrative headquarters, 227 Thorne Avenue in Orchard Park. Spectrum Health has opened positions for clinicians, administrative support roles, and medical services at all skill levels, a direct result of the agency's continued growth and response to need. Applicants are invited to register for the event. Walk-ins are welcome too. Meet with hiring managers for an introductory interview and learn more about the agency and its mission. At Spectrum Health and Human Services, our people are the heart of everything we do, said Cindy Volker, President and CEO. Every day, our team makes a meaningful difference in the lives of individuals in the communities we serve. We are seeking dedicated individuals who are passionate about serving others and making a lasting impact. We invite you to join us and become part of a mission-driven organization that values collaboration, innovation, professional growth, and excellence in care. Spectrum Health was founded in 1973 and has grown to include certified community behavioral health clinics in Buffalo, West Seneca, Springville, and Warsaw, plus community and housing teams in Olean, Niagara Falls, and Buffalo. Nearly 400 individuals are employed by the agency, which was recently named one of the top workplaces in New York State by the Albany-based City and State magazine. Suburban car thefts, how to stay vigilant. This is by Scott Robinson. For decades, suburbs were viewed as safe havens compared to cities. Crime data for recent decades shows a more unfavorable trend for many suburban neighborhoods. While overall crime has fallen substantially in many metropolitan areas, the gap between city and suburban rates has narrowed recently, and vehicle theft remains a persistent concern in residential communities. Car theft has evolved with technology, and those trying to steal vehicles being more brazen and lawless. Modern vehicles are harder to steal through traditional means, but thieves increasingly exploit keyless entry systems via relay attacks that capture fob signals from inside homes. Thefts still occur when doors are left unlocked, valuables are visible, or keys are left unattended. Tens of thousands of vehicles are stolen annually with similar patterns of key cloning, signal jamming, and tow-away thefts appearing in many areas. Suburbs with driveways, quieter streets, and parked cars left for long periods can present attractive targets. This does not mean that these types of thefts or incidents will not occur during daylight hours. Unfortunately, they most certainly can and do. Attempted carjackings and theft in the middle of the day or early evening is happening more and more. Practical preventive measures can make a measurable difference. Here are some key tips to deter and or avoid this happening to you. Always lock your vehicle, even in your driveway or while briefly stepping away. Double check that the lock engaged. Signal jammers can sometimes block fob commands. Keep keys and fobs far from exterior doors and windows. If able, store them in a signal blocking pouch and test the pouch periodically. Turn off wireless functions on fobs when possible. Never leave spare keys, documents, or valuables in plain sight. Use the trunk for items that must stay in the car. Park in well-lit, visible, or staffed areas whenever possible. Height-restricted entrances deter tow trucks. Add layers of physical security, high-end, property-rated steering wheel locks, pedal locks, gear stick locks, alarms, immobilizers, and tracking devices. These deter opportunity for thefts and aid recovery. Reprogram keys on used vehicles and remain vigilant when meeting potential buyers. Never let keys leave your sight. Use dash cams with parking mode, home security cameras covering driveways, and neighborhood watch networks to increase detection and deterrence. While community-level action is essential, individual efforts and responsible steps play an important role in addressing and preventing incidents. Report suspicious tow trucks and groups or individuals loitering near vehicles or in your neighborhood. Identifying unusual activity helps police respond. Suburban crime rates have improved in many places over the long term, yet vehicle theft adapts to new technology and opportunity. Consistent locking habits, key security, visible deterrence, and basic tracking or alarm systems remain the most effective everyday defense for residents. If you see something that looks odd or off, report it. I would like to take a moment to thank the men and women of local law enforcement, especially those in the town of West Seneca. Random car theft attempts are becoming far too common. Police officers do their best to curb these events, but the individuals participating in these illegal activities don't care. Once a police chase ensues, many different entities are put in unsafe situations. Do your best to avoid being a target or a statistic. Be vigilant, heed the advice of this article, and always be aware of your surroundings. Stay away from the mindset of, it will never happen to me or near me, because believe me, it can happen to or around any of our neighborhoods. I personally have witnessed these situations firsthand in my own neighborhood. Stay alert, stay safe, and God bless our law enforcement. Before we move to our next paper, we'd like to tell you, you're listening to Around Our Area on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. And we move to our next paper, which is The Sun, and this is the Friday, August 14th, 2026 edition. We go to our first article, Cannabis Dispensary Proposed for Former Bottle Return Center on Lakeshore Road. This is by Chris Graham. A developer is looking to transform a former bottle return center on Lakeshore Road into a cannabis dispensary, but Town of Hamburg Planning Board members want to make sure security measures and protections for nearby businesses are part of the plan. A.K. Cade, along with a partner, are planning to buy the building and make a significant investment to revamp the former bottle return center at 3233 Lakeshore Road into a dispensary. The project, which is in the M3 General Industrial District, has received a use variance from the Town of Hamburg Zoning Board of Appeals, as cannabis dispensaries are not permitted in that zoning classification. Because the project is a former bottle return center, there is a garage door as part of the building. Tommaso Briatico of Tommaso Briatico Architects said the plan was to turn the garage door into a glass overhead door that could be opened. New York State cannabis law says that any establishment selling cannabis must be fully enclosed building, so the door has to remain closed at all times. Planning Board member Richard Zajac asked if the glass on the door could be frosted, as there is a music studio across the street from the proposed dispensary. The music studio is within 500 feet of the proposed project. My concern is the youth across the street going to their music classes, Zajac said. Zajac stressed that the frosted glass will not allow any children that are at the music studio to see into the dispensary from across the street. Retico said the developer wants to have a building where people can see what's going on inside. Cindy Ganachin, chair of the planning board, believed that the glass should be frosted or tinted. The proposed plan also includes a security office. Zajac asked if this meant a security guard would be present. Briatico said the dispensary will have a monitored security system, but believed no security guard would be present. Ganachin said she would like to receive a detailed security plan from the developer, including what the security measures will be and what cameras will be used and where they will be located. I think it's important that we get that on the record, she said. The plan also includes a gazebo next to the entrance to the building. Briatico said this was designed as a welcoming feature and is not intended to be a seating area. It's not designed for people to be sitting there and smoking, Briatico said. Zajac stressed that this biggest concern would be outside consumption. Briatico said there will be cameras outside to where if an employee sees outdoor consumption occurring, they would be able to address it. Another member of the board, Milton Quandt, said he would like a specific condition in site plan approval that says no outdoor seating would be allowed in the gazebo. While the Town of Hamburg does allow for dispensaries in the municipality, outdoor consumption is not permitted. Any issues of outdoor consumption would be handled by the town's code enforcement office or the Hamburg Town Police Department. While planning board members did have concerns, a public hearing was held on the project on August 5th. No one from the public spoke. Before site plan approval and a change of use is granted, the board was looking to receive confirmation that the garage door will be changed to a glass door and either frosted or tinted glass. Notification on the outside of the building that outdoor consumption of products is not allowed, and the security plan. The project will be back in front of the board for discussion at their next meeting. Two EV charging stations officially operational in the village of Hamburg. This is by Chris Graham. The long wait is over. Two electric vehicle charging stations in the Main and Buffalo Streets parking lot, also known as the Community Hub, are officially operational and ready for use by the public. In April, the village approved a $36,594.67 contract with Schenectady-based Linkwell, who is on the New York State contract, to install the two dual-part Level 2 charging stations. The stations are two pedestals with two charging ports each. The contract also included all associated electrical work and site signage. The agreement also comes with a 10-year software license. The money for the contract is supplied by a $48,000 grant the village received through the New York State Department of Environmental Transportation's Municipal Zero Emissions Vehicle Infrastructure Grant Program. The chargers are next to the lawn offices of Albert Hegersheimer III across the street from the Palace Theater, placing them in the center of the village's downtown business district. The chargers, which became operational last month, had 8 unique drivers that used them as of July 30th. Individuals are able to pay for a charge either through an app for the chargers or a credit card swipe. They're being used, and that's a positive, said Village Administrator Jason Kaza. The charging ports were first discussed as part of the Community Hub project to re-envision the parking lot at Main and Buffalo Streets in 2023. The Hub project, which was mostly completed in 2024, saw the expansion of Harbor Peace Park by 25 feet, the addition of a pergola and fountain, heated sidewalks, additional landscaping, lighting, and benches, and the repaving and restriping of portions of the lot. On August 3rd, the village officially created a new revenue account for the chargers in the lot. The fee associated with the chargers will be 30 cents per kilowatt hour. When someone goes to the RV or EV chargers, they'll be able to plug in and then they'll be charged 30 cents a kilowatt hour, Kaza said. Those are the revenues that are received by the village to offset the expected costs that will incur for the power consumption of the hub. Canvas to Cuisine event officially approved for September 12th. This is by Chris Graham. Canvas to Cuisine, a first-time event in the village of Hamburg, has been officially approved to take place on Saturday, September 12th. The event, presented by the Inspire Foundation, will be held from 2 until 10 p.m. on Buffalo Street from Main Street to Union Street. Coming from event organizers Rich Bloss and Gretchen Widener, Canvas to Cuisine will be an open street dining and music experience paired with the annual Art and Chalk Walk. Blase is previously speaking to The Sun about the new event said, it takes inspiration from Europe. Blase traveled to Europe in 2025 and saw the abundance of open street dining and wanted to bring that experience to the village for a one night only. The plan would see Buffalo Street blocked off from Main Street to Union Street. It's expected the street would be blocked off at noon. It'll take some grace because it's a new event to see how this one will go, said Village Administrator Jason Kaza. It'll certainly require some village resources and attention from the police department and the fire department. Bluss said he has spoken to the New York State Department of Transportation about blocking the street off. He was told there would be no issue, and the DOT just needed to know the event had been approved by the Hamburg Village Board, which it was on August 3rd. The plan is to invite all village restaurants to take part in the event. There's expected to be 1,000 square feet of outdoor dining on Buffalo Street. Able Tables will set up tables and chairs with black tablecloths for all the restaurants on the street. The event has already received commitments from Desiderio's Italian Restaurant, Blue Eyed Baker, Coyote Cafe, Sandbaggers, Main Street Ice Cream, Alchemy Wine and Beer, Buffalo Burger Brothers, Black Smoke Bourbon Bar, and among others. The restaurants will be serving alcohol. There will be rope barricades around those areas. Bloss said each restaurant serving alcohol will need to have an employee policing their own 30 by 30 foot space. There will also be signage at each restaurant serving alcohol that patrons cannot wander around the festival with a drink. We're going to keep all the people that are serving alcohol together, Bloss said. While the dining will occur on the street, the sidewalks will be dedicated to art and chalk walk. Artists taking part will line the sidewalks on Buffalo Street. In the past, 25 chalk artists and 15 youth artists would take part in the art and chalk walk. It's expected there will be more participants for this new event. It looks like a lot of the art and the chalk walk people will be off the sidewalks before the evening dining starts, Bloss said. The art and chalk walk will also feature face painting, a select number of fine artists, and Buffalo Fine Art, bringing a group of live painters to paint and sell their work. The painters' canvases will be displayed for exhibit and on sale on the alley next to the Sandbaggers at 15 Buffalo Street. Radius Federal Credit Union approved for Southwestern Boulevard location. This is by Chris Graham. A third branch of Radius Federal Credit Union will be coming to the town of Hamburg. The Town of Hamburg Planning Board has granted a site plan approval to the project at 5505 Southwestern Boulevard, which will be a 2,460 square foot building that includes a drive-thru and four-car garage. The four-car garage is for storage, as there is no basement in the facility. This will be the third location for Radius Federal Credit Union in the area, as they also have offices in the village of Kenmore and the village of Angola. The credit union is expected to have 6 employees. The credit union, which has been operating since 1941, offers members the same services as a bank, along with lower rates on loans, fewer fees, and higher yields on saving products that banks, according to the credit union website. A public hearing on the project was held on August 5th. No one from the public spoke during the hearing. It was previously said that the other two locations will usually have 2 to 3 cars waiting in a drive-thru to do their banking at a given time. The plan allows for 14 stacking spaces for the drive-thru at the Southwestern Boulevard branch. There will be 22 parking spaces on site. Credit union officials said the idea will be to use this new location to advertise to Hamburg residents about the services they provide. RP Oak Hill Building Company completes new picnic pavilion. RP Oak Hill Building Company Incorporated has completed construction of a new 24 by 40 foot picnic pavilion for the Hamburg Natural History Society at Penn-Dixie Fossil Park and Nature Preserve. The Phase 2 project was completed in June. The new covered pavilion provides a flexible outdoor space for small group instruction, school field trip activities, small gatherings, and additional science, cultural, and community programming. Penn-Dixie welcomes more than 5,000 young learners through school field trips each year, and the pavilion expands the organization's ability to serve students, educators, families, and visitors in the sheltered setting. The pavilion was funded through a district grant from the New York State Assembly and designed by architect Michael Anderson of Abstract Architecture, RPC. RP Oak Hill Building Company Incorporated served as the construction contractor for the project. The completion of this pavilion is an exciting step forward for Penn-Dixie, for the community, and for the thousands of science enthusiasts who come here each year to learn and discover. This development was 30 years in the making. It would not be possible without our partnership with RP Oak Hill, said Dr. Phil Stokes, Executive Director of Pendixie. It was a privilege to help create a lasting space where young people, families, and community groups can gather, learn, and enjoy this unique Western New York destination, added Chris Hogan, Chief Operating Officer of RP Oak Hill Building Company. The pavilion is part of a nearly $2 million multi-phase investment in Pendixie's continued growth. Phase 1, completed in 2024, redeveloped a 4-acre portion of the former Pennsylvania Dixie Cement Quarry with site engineering, grading, stormwater mitigation, and a parking area. The improvements strengthen Pendixie's capacity for science-based learning, outdoor recreation, cultural programming, and community engagement through Western New York. Galvin DiPietro, dedicate bridge to fallen New York State Thruway Authority worker. State Senator Patrick Galvin, Assemblyman David DiPietro, and New York State Thruway Authority Executive Director Frank Hoar dedicated a bridge in honor of Thruway Maintenance Supervisor Stephen Ebling, who died while performing his duties after being struck by a vehicle in November of 2024. Family, friends, and colleagues of the 58-year-old Town of Eden resident gathered at the Silver Creek Thruway Maintenance section for the dedication. Under legislation sponsored by Galvin and DiPietro and signed by Governor Kathy Hochul, the bridge on Eden-Evans Center Road that crosses the New York State Thruway will be dedicated in memory of Ebling. On November 4, 2024, the 15-year veteran of the Thruway Authority was working along the westbound I-90 in the town of Hanover when a vehicle crossed over the hazard markings and struck him. Outside of his duties with the Thruway Authority, Ebling served as a part-time police officer with the North Collins Police Department. Steve was a dedicated family man who exemplified public service, Galvin said. We recognize his hard work and commitment to keeping our community safe and the sacrifice he and his family have made. Dedicating this bridge in his name not only honors his memory, but serves as a reminder of the danger he and his colleagues face while keeping our highway safe. The residents of New York State are grateful for his service. Today, we proudly dedicate the Eden-Evans Center Road Bridge in honor of Thruway Maintenance Supervisor Stephen C. Ebling, whose commitment to public service and the safety of others defined both his career and his life, added Hoar. Steve exemplified the very best of the New York State Thruway Authority, serving with professionalism, integrity, and unwavering dedication to keeping travelers safe. This bridge will stand as a lasting tribute to his legacy, ensuring that everyone who crosses it is reminded of the sacrifices made by those who work every day to maintain our transportation system. Last November, the Thruway Authority installed a plaque in memory of Ebling at the Silver Creek Maintenance Section. His name is also included on the Fallen Workers Memorial Wall at the Thruway Headquarters in Albany, which recognizes workers who have lost their lives while performing their duties. Ebling is survived by his wife, Belinda, sons Joel and Brett, and numerous family members and friends. Enlightened Salon opens in former home of Tress's Hair Studio. This also is by Chris Graham. Emily Buffon, owner of Enlightened Salon, fell in love with the hair business in high school. Buffon, who attended Hamburg High School, took advantage of the Erie 1 BOCES program for cosmetology. After doing 2 years of cosmetology study and graduating in 2019, she got her cosmetology license in 2020 and started her hairstyling career. I've always been pretty artistic, so doing hair has always come naturally for me, Buffon said. It's a great outlet for me, creativity. I work to have a passion of mine and a career all in one. She worked at a couple of different salons, building up a customer base, before arriving at the Studio 182 in the village of Hamburg, doing hair at Studio 182 for the last 3 years. Buffon said about a year into the experience, she knew that the goal was to ultimately have her own salon. It was a lot of learning to be on my own boss, basically, Buffon said. After seeing the amount of people willing to come see me, get serviced by me, and feel comfortable with me as their stylist, I realized this could be something I could do in the future. Buffon started looking for her own space in May, finally finding the former home of Tress's Hair Salon at 133 Pine Street. She toured the space, and with it already being a former salon, Buffon believed it would be an easy transition to have the spot operate as a salon once again. We lucked out with this one. It definitely was a plus that it was already an existing salon, she said. It made the process a lot easier. Enlightened Salon officially opened August 5th. I want to be very opening and welcoming space, said Buffon, of what she envisions Enlightened Salon to be. I want everyone and anyone to feel safe and comfortable. I want it to be a fun working environment. We all are doing our own thing here, but I want to be able to have the team bouncing ideas off each other. The salon will provide color, highlights, cuts, waxing, and new styles. In the early going, Buffon and another stylist will be taking on clients. There is space for four stylists, and Buffon is looking to ultimately have four stylists in the salon. The salon stations can be rented for $800 per month. Everyone is a renter here, so they have their own LLC, and they're able to do their own clientele, colors, and prices, she said. They're their own entity. They just work here. But I definitely want to have a supportive, uplifting team here. I would definitely make sure that the stylists that work here are fitting under the criteria. The salon will be open Tuesday through Saturday. Appointments can be made online at Vagaro, that's vagaro.com/enlightensalon, or by calling or texting 716-539-0061. Buffon said her ability to express herself to her clients is what separates Enlightened Salon from other salons in the area. I'm myself with my clients, and I feel that's how I've built their trust, because I am so open and honest about myself with them, Buffon said. I think having that more personable experience here is what's going to set us apart. Importance of farmland transition protection to be highlighted at the Erie County Fair. Providence Farm Collective, Everybody Eats, celebrating our agricultural heritage, cyanotype exhibit is on display at the Ag Range building at the Erie County Fair through Sunday, August 23rd. The collective will be joined by the Western New York Land Conservancy from noon until 1 p.m. Friday, August 14th, in the Ag Range building, where representatives from both organizations share their partnership model for transitioning farmland, protecting it perpetuity, and supporting the next generation of farmers and producers. The talk will highlight how keeping a farmland in production and supporting the important role of small and mid-sized farms are fundamental to strengthening local food security, thereby creating conditions for a region where everybody thrives. Their motto for collaboration makes the case that everyone has a role to play in creating an Erie County food system that bolsters the local economy and forges an agricultural future that promotes self-sufficiency and security in the region. As farmland becomes harder to access and more farms face transition, we must act now to protect the farmland that feeds Western New Yorkers, said Kristen Haltman Weiss, executive director of the collective. This conversation is about making sure Erie County's farmland remains productive, protected, and accessible for future generations of farmers. Our successful joint capital campaign with the Western New York Land Conservancy, completed in 2022, shows what is possible when organizations work in partnership and investment is made by a greater community for the common good. County Clerk pays tribute to Purple Heart recipients in celebration of National Purple Heart Day. Erie County Clerk Michael Kearns recently marked National Purple Heart Day by honoring Erie County veterans whose names were added to the 9th annual William J. Donovan Purple Heart Book of Merit for 2026. The ceremony served as a reminder that the freedoms celebrated during America's 250th anniversary were secured through the courage and sacrifice of generations of Americans, servicemen, and servicewomen. The Purple Heart itself traces its origin to the Revolutionary War, when General George Washington established a badge of military merit on August 7, 1782, the predecessor to today's Purple Heart, making it the nation's oldest military decoration still awarded. You've been listening to Around Our Area, a weekly look at community newspapers from around Western New York. Your reader for this hour has been Sally Herzog. Thank you so much for listening.
Coming up next in the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service, we have the Ampole Eagle. At 4 o'clock, we have the Grand Island Niagara County Tribune Sentinel. And following that, at 5 o'clock, we have the Lockport Union Sun and Journal. Stay with us for these readings and more throughout the day. Thank you. following program is intended for listeners who are blind, have low vision, or have another print disability, which